I'm sorry for what I said when you tried to wake me up. Well, I have a confession to make this morning, and that is I'm not proud of something I did once when I was trying to wake our son up for work. As a teenager, you know how teenagers are, he would always stay up too late, and I literally had to drag him out of bed. You know, sometimes I would go upstairs three times to wake him up. And one morning, I was really late for work. I had an extremely important meeting on my agenda. I had to hit the highway, and I absolutely could not drag him out of bed. I opened the blinds. I turned on the lights. I dragged the covers off of him. I shook him. I took his pillow out from under his head and beat him with it. I did everything. And he would not wake up. And so I walked into the bathroom to get something. And there, on the bathroom counter, I was sure the angels had placed it there just for me, was a squirt bottle full of water. My daughter used it for her hair. And I'm telling you, that squirt bottle just flew right into my hands. I charged into that room, and with both hands, I started the attack. I mean to tell you, I gave him a squirt for every single day he had made me walk up those steps 3 days. At the end of it, he was soaking, going, "I surrender, I surrender." We affectionately call that the day of the water torture in our family. Now, I am not proud of that moment, and neither did I win Mother of the Year that day. However, I'll tell you one thing, it worked. Never again did I have to make three trips upstairs, so it did work. Okay. Well, today, we're going to begin a mini-series, I'm calling it, focused on another kind of awakening, thank goodness, spiritual awakening. And one of the resources that we'll be dipping into, I'll be using other resources along with this, but is a fairly new book called You Can't Sleep Through Your Awakening. I love that title. I think it's a great title. Reverend Jane Simmons begins the book with this quote, "You can't sleep through your awakening. Trust me, I've tried." And haven't we all? Haven't we all tried to sleep through our awakening? It seems blatantly obvious that that's an impossibility, that we have to wake up in order to live an awakened life. And yet Simmons says, and I quote, "The issue appears to be that we as a species are unaware even of being asleep." Then she shares the story that we've actually discussed before of the man who reached enlightenment after sitting under the Bodhi tree for 45 days. And you know I'm talking about the Buddha. And later on, people came to him as they would later to Jesus Christ. And they said to him, "What are you? Are you a man?" And he said, "No." "Are you a god?" And he said, "No." "Are you an angel?" And he said, "No." And then they said, "Well, if you're not a man, you're not a god, and you're not an angel, what are you?" And his response was, "I am awakened. I am awakened." And actually that incident became his name, because the word the Buddha in Sanskrit means the awakened one or the enlightened one. And so Simmons writes about this tale. This well-known Buddhist story illustrates so beautifully the potential for transformation that comes from an awakening, as well as the depth of spiritual understanding that it engenders. As we wake up, we sense our connection with something greater. Our eyes are opened through a flash of insight, and suddenly there is the dawning on our awareness of something previously hidden from us. It can come in a blinding aha moment, as it did to Paul on the road to Damascus, or for many of us, it happens more gradually. So the question is, what does it mean to be spiritually awake? What does it mean? Well, according to Webster, awake means more than to cease sleeping. It means to become conscious of or aware of. And Charles Fillmore, co-founder of the Unity Movement, defines spiritual awakening as becoming conscious or aware of the things of spirit. Centuries after Buddha, Jesus came to this earth on a spiritual mission to help us all wake up to the truth about God. Spiritual awakening means to open our eyes to an ever-emerging awareness of the true nature of the divine. For me, that sometimes happens in a blinding flash, but often happens every moment, every breath. Now, Emily Cady says, to define God in our human minds is like trying to crowd the infinite into a quart-sized jar. Do you all agree with that? You know, I do too, because defining is an intellectual activity, isn't it? That's brain work, right? And can we really ever define the indefinable? I mean, we could spend the rest of our lives talking about what God is, what the divine is, and we could never quite nail it. To know the divine is to experience God, not in our heads, but in our hearts. And in our heads, we sometimes picture God created in our image, because that's all we can conjure up, instead of the other way around, right? And yet, as we spiritually evolve, we gain a deeper understanding of God as all that is. Now, many of you have been in classes where we have actually brainstormed characteristics of God. God is. And this particular slide that I have is one of the latest classes. So this is from you all. So God is, of course, what Joe Warren always called the three omnis, right? God is omnipotence, not omnipotent, that's an adjective. God is the state of omnipotence. He is, he, she is, omniscience and omnipresence. In addition to the omnis, however, God is love. If I had said to you, what is God? That's probably the first thing that pops in your heads, right? God is love. So as I show these different characteristics, I'd like you to say them out loud for me. Okay, so let's go back. Ready? God is love. Spirit. Goodness, oneness, order, power, wisdom, light, peace, strength, life. Did we get them all? Wholeness, okay, wholeness. And actually, God is a lot more than that. But the point is, notice what is not on the list. Do you see anywhere on the list words like arbitrary, judging, vindictive? And in the words of Charles Fillmore, my personal favorite quote of Charles Fillmore's, this is from Talks in Truth, he says, it is your mission to be all that you can imagine God to be. Let this be your standard of achievement. Never lower it, nor allow yourself to be belittled by the cry of sacrilege. You can attain everything you can imagine. If you can imagine that it is possible to God, it is also possible to you. This is the law. This is the law. So, the question is, how many of you are ready to accept that? How many of us are ready to accept that? Are we ready to accept that we are God's expression on this earth and we are here to be all that we can imagine God to be? Well, if so, we need to look at this quote by Oliver Wendell Holmes. Man's mind, once stretched by a new idea, never regains its original dimensions. So even though our evolution, our awareness might be gradual, once we even entertain the idea of this, our mind will never be the same, and our soul will never be the same. So, in addition to all of this, Jesus Christ came to this earth to help us see God differently. It was one of his missions. He came to earth to awaken us to the truth of our own Christ nature also. He taught again and again that the kingdom of heaven is where? Within. In John 10:34, he says, is it not written in your law, and that means in the Hebrew Bible in Psalms, is it not written in your law, I said, ye are gods? And in the Gospel of Thomas, one of those Gospels which did not make the cut into the canon, one of the non-canonical Gospels, it reads, Jesus says, actually, if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. Isn't that powerful? If you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. Now, at about the midpoint of Jesus' ministry, early one morning, he comes to the temple in Jerusalem, and he's surrounded by his Hebrew followers, and some of them are really confused by his message because it seems so different, almost in conflict with what they've studied in the Hebrew Bible. And so Jesus clarifies for them, and for us, of course, speaking those words that we pass by every single time we enter First Unity. In John 8:32, he says, "If you continue in my word and are truly my disciples," say this with me, "you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free." You shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Now, according to Bible scholar Ed Townley, Jesus is telling his followers here that if they continue to believe in the truth he is teaching, the truth of individual divinity, everything else will fall into place. They will know the truth, that is, they will experience the kingdom consciousness, not in their heads, but in their hearts. And in doing so, they will be totally free from any dualistic concepts of lack and limitation that we talked about last week. This is an absolute promise. There is nothing to prove, nothing to study, no test to pass, no rituals to perform. And the same promise holds true for us right here, right now. If we begin to live our lives as the divine beings we are, then divine energy becomes our life experiences. And we realize that it is within our power to create the kingdom of heaven on this earth. That kind of spiritual awakening is, as I said, not intellectual. It might best be described as a deep inner knowingness of the truth. And in fact, Charles Fillmore defines truth as the absolute, that which accords with God as divine principle, that which eternally is. The truth of God is reality with a capital R and abides within the core of our being. And so as our awareness expands, in other words, as we wake up more and more, we touch the everlasting truth, and we know without a shadow of a doubt that that truth is within. So back to our book. Here's what it looks like. We have copies in the bookstore if anybody's interested. Back to our book, You Can't Sleep Through Your Awakening. Jane Simmons writes about a time when she was 6 years old. She was having a conversation with her best girlfriend about heaven and hell. She said it was a very early metaphysical conversation. So, in her words, "like a lightning bolt, the truth came to me that the story I had been fed about an eternal afterlife of torture was simply not the truth. As the light dawned within me, a feeling of warmth and peace enveloped me. I knew that a loving, compassionate presence that I felt within would never consign me to an eternity of suffering. No, the reality was that the loving presence within that I felt in the depths of my heart would welcome me with open arms and offer the grand prize of eternal, never-ending joy and probably cartoons or whatever else your mission, your passion is. Maybe chocolate, I don't know, whatever. So decades later, Jane writes, in the middle of conducting a memorial service for a young man who had committed suicide, she had another spiritual insight. She writes about the questions that were circling in her mind as she was performing the service. Did the young man ever know how much he was loved and valued? Did he ever see his beautiful gifts within? If he could have known his own value and worth, would he have made a different choice? And Simmons writes, in that moment, a fire was ignited under me. Fanning those flames was the realization that although at a young age I had dismissed the afterlife version of hell as completely ludicrous, the subsequent years of living had shown me it was possible to be imprisoned in a very real internal hell in our current life. And that's what we talked about last year, about what the devil metaphorically represents. All those thoughts in our heads that are not the truth. And so this insight that she had during the memorial service led Jane Simmons to a mission to step out of the mire of suffering and help others do the same. She writes, by learning and sharing the art of wholehearted living, we can all open the prison door, awaken to the true authentic self within, discover our self-worth, and stop postponing a joy-filled life. Awakened insight married to compassionate action, she says, is the key. So the bottom line is, we are on this earth to awaken to what is real, real with a capital R. Yet, Jane Simmons says, it is entirely possible to walk through life unconsciously, seemingly awake and yet not present either. When our heads and our hearts are not in the same place, we're not really living at all. We're just going through the motions. So if you're willing, raise your hand if you have ever driven all the way to some location and then realized you could not even remember the specifics of the drive. Anybody? I have more times than I want to admit. Sometimes I pull up in church and I think, how did I drive here today? I mean, I don't even know which highways I took, you know? That's a little dangerous, isn't it? It is a little dangerous. But, she says, some of us fear self-driving cars. They fill us full of fear and apprehension. I don't know, it looks pretty cushy to me. I think it would be all right. But she says, how many vehicles are already being driven robotically by people lost in thought or effectively asleep at the wheel? Good thing that guy has somebody in the passenger seat, right? This is really a metaphor for our lives. When we unconsciously sleepwalk through our days, we relinquish the driver's seat to unconscious programming. And aside from being a danger to ourselves and others, we don't fully experience life. We miss a deeper sense of its blessings and joys. Simmons continues, and I love this line, we don't just sleepwalk, we sleep talk, sleep listen, sleep drive, sleep work, and sleep text. She says we can get to the point where we are never fully present. Because our minds are habitually dissatisfied or maybe uninvolved with the present moment, we dwell on the past, stuck in memories of what has been. And maybe we hang on to those memories with longing, or maybe we get stuck in painful moments. Either way, we're mesmerized by the scene in the rearview mirror, playing it over and over again, like I would add the movie Groundhog Day. Does anybody remember that movie? The same thing over and over again. And we remember what happened to Lot's wife. We did that story not too long ago. When she looked back, remember what happened to her? Turned into a pillar of salt, okay? Now, that doesn't mean that we can't look back and learn from our experiences. It's just that we can't live there. We can't live there. She says our minds also might be involved in what has been called nexting. Do anybody know what nexting means? Well, I realize there are multiple meanings for the term, one involving dating, and that's not the one we're talking about here, and one involving the power of positive visualization, and that can be a good thing. But Reverend Simmons defines nexting as constantly focusing on an imaginary future, thinking that's where our fulfillment lies, without being fully aware of the blessings of the here and now. So we get so focused on the future that we don't enjoy the now moment. And the Buddha said, back to Buddha, the secret of health for both mind and body is not to mourn for the past, worry about the future, or anticipate troubles, but to live in the present moment wisely and earnestly. And I would add, wisely, earnestly, and joyously. Really, if you think about it, the past and the future are both illusions. They really don't exist. What we call the past is just some memory of a recent event, or our event doesn't have to be recent. And research has shown that every time we remember something from the past, our brain networks change a little bit in ways that actually alter the memory. And that means the next time we remember it, it's not quite the same. We might remember not the original event, but our past memory about it. Does that make sense? It keeps changing in our minds. And so, when you feel like your past is haunting you or calling you or pulling you back, don't answer. It has nothing new to say. Been there, done that. It has nothing new to say. Well, what about the future? Well, the Jafal is right in the quest. Future is yet to be. And think about it, when it does arrive, it will no longer be the future, it will be the now, right? And no time exists other than this now moment. The past is compost, they say. The future is the seed not yet planted. The present is the only soil in which you can grow. You can't get on an airplane that left yesterday, and you can't board one that leaves tomorrow, right? More importantly, you can't grow from where you were yesterday, and you can't grow from where you will be tomorrow. You are planted where you are because the soil is best for you at this time of your unfoldment. And even, as Kathy and Chuck sang so beautifully today, even when we feel discouraged, even when the shadows come and our hearts feel lonely, we always have the power to stay in the present moment and trust the process. We are never alone, even when it seems like we are. We are never alone. We are one with a power and presence greater than this world. Fully awakened to all the powers of the Christ, we have everything we need, always. And again, from the Jafalas, the bits and pieces of our lives take on more meaning when we begin seeing God in every situation, no matter what it is, no matter what it is. And how many of us have called a life situation bad, and it seems so awful at the time, but later we look back on it and find great gifts, great blessings, and great lessons. Raise your hand if that's ever happened to you. It certainly has happened to me time and time again. And Jane Simmons writes, "What if something happening in your life right now had the potential to be the stimulus for your growth, your development, your transformation? What if it could bring a deeper wholeness that is behind all of what you think is real? In other words, we can use whatever is showing up in this outer plane of existence. We can use that as a catalyst for our awakening." Now, next week, we're going to continue on our series of spiritual awakening and get in some more specifics. Next week, one of the things we're going to talk about is perception correction. So stay tuned, all right? But in the meantime, let us all remember that opportunities to awaken to the magnificence of the divine and to the truth of our own spiritual essence come moment by moment, thought by thought, prayer by prayer. We are on this earth not just to see the light. We are on this earth to be the light. And as we set the intention to wake up, the universe responds, and we are poised for infinite possibilities of good, not only in our own lives, but in the world. For each time a new person awakens to universal truth, the whole of humanity is lifted up, and the world is awakening. So let's take that thought now with us as we prepare for prayer and meditation by affirming the foundational principle about God, that there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life, God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.